Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
This message comes from our sponsor, Teladoc Health. There are lots of reasons for wanting to be healthy. Family, work, living a fuller life. Teladoc Health understands. Whether you have diabetes, high blood pressure, or just need to manage your weight, Teladoc Health can help. Visit teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy for more information. That's TeladoC Health/whatsyourwhy.
Today's guest, Chaz Palminteri, will be appearing at Fallsview Casino, starring in A Bronx Tale, a one-man show, on March 9, 2024. Don't miss the opportunity to see this spectacular star live in concert. You can purchase tickets for this event by going to fallsviewcasinoresort.com or ticketmaster.ca.
Hello, everyone. I'm Harvey Brownstone, and today's special guest is a mega-talented, multi-award-winning and beloved actor, writer, producer, and director who's brought us a myriad of unforgettable performances. We first got to know his on-screen persona as the streetwise, hard-nosed, unflinching tough guy in his brilliant, classic breakout film, A Bronx Tale, based on his highly acclaimed one-man show, which played on Broadway and has toured across the country. Since then, he's shown amazing versatility in dozens of great movies, including Hurley Burley, The Usual Suspects, Diabolique, Mulholland Falls, The Perez Family, One-Eyed King, Pool Hall Junkies, Running Scared, Once More with Feeling, and of course, Bullets Over Broadway, for which he was nominated for an Academy Award, a Screen Actors Guild Award, a Chicago Film Critics Association Award, and an American Comedy Award for Best Supporting Actor, and he won the Film Independent Spirit Award for Best Supporting Actor. On television, he's appeared on many shows and TV movies, including Glory Years, Peter Gunn, Excellent Cadavers, Boss of Bosses, An Unorganized Crime, which he also co-wrote and which won 11 major film festival awards. And who can ever forget him as Shorty on Modern Family? In recent years, he's taken his fabulous one-man show, A Bronx Tale, on tour across America, playing to sold-out audiences and getting rave reviews. In 2021, the show was voted Best Show of the Year in Las Vegas. And of course, our guest even played Sonny on Broadway in A Bronx Tale, the musical. When he isn't busy making movies, TV shows, and touring in his one-man show, he's hosting a highly popular podcast, The Chaz Palminteri Show, interviewing A-list celebrities, sharing life lessons and insights from a life well lived. I am delighted and deeply honored to welcome the one and only Chaz Palminteri to our show. Mr. Palminteri, thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you so much, Harvey. It's great to be here.
Now, of course, everyone knows that your decision to write A Bronx Tale about your own story happened at a time in your life when you were not doing very well professionally. You've told the story many times of how you got fired as a doorman at the 2020 Club in Beverly Hills for not letting Swifty Lazar into his own party, which is really a very funny story. But my question is, do you think you still would have written the play if you had already been a hugely successful star?
Wow, that's a really good question. I don't know. I don't know, Harvey. I was very fortunate because before Bronx Tale came out, I auditioned for Bullets Over Broadway, and I did get the part. So I don't know if that would have, I really, you know, no one's ever asked me that before, and it's an amazing question. I was writing at the time, and I'm sure I would have found my way to that story because, you know, as a 9-year-old, you don't forget something like that. And it always stayed in my mind that I always wanted to write about it. I always wanted to write about my relationship with the wise guys and my dad. And I thought it would make an interesting movie. And finally, when I got fired from my job, I said, okay, now's the time to write it. You know, sometimes poverty is the best thing for you. You know, it gets you off your ass and you say, okay, I've been saying I want to write this, so I better just write it. And I did.
When you first wrote A Bronx Tale, why did you decide to make it a one-man show with you playing all 18 characters rather than making right. it a regular play with a whole lot of actors?
Well, I knew it would be a lot easier to just do it myself, to control everything myself, but I had to figure out a way to do it. I said, well, if I could delineate who's talking, then I could probably do it. And that was the hardest thing. You know, Sonny's mannerisms, his accent, Lorenzo's accent, his mannerisms, the young boy, the 9-year-old, the 17-year-old. And I just worked really at practice and practice. And I mean, I was an accomplished actor. It's not like, you know, I was on Broadway and I'm a member of the Actors Studio, but I never caught a real break. But I knew I could do it and I knew I could show myself off. And you know what? When Peter Guba saw it, and he said to me, he goes, what you created was the greatest audition for an actor and the greatest pitch for a movie. And he was right, you know, but instead of reading the script, people were able to see the movie on stage.
They sure could. So what inspired you to turn A Bronx Tale into a musical?
Well, that was really Bob and Tommy Mottola. And I always said, I said to them early on, you know, this make a great musical. It has all the elements, you know. And then finally one day, Tommy Mottola called me and said, you know, I think you should do the musical. And I said, well, all right, but we tried a few composers, really great ones, but it didn't fit. And then I turned to them one day and I said, you know who I like to get? And that's Alan Menken. I said, this is a fable. And I said, and Alan Menken writes fables. They might be animated, but they're fables. And I said, I remember seeing the play Little Shop of Horrors. And I said, and he did doo-wop and R&B. And I said, he'd be the best guy for this. And I called him and I knew him from a movie that I directed that he wrote one of the songs. And he read the script and he just loved it. And that's how it started.
Would you like to see A Bronx Tale, the musical, made into a movie?
Oh, I would love that. I wouldn't want to play. I definitely don't want to play Sonny. I don't want to be in it. I just want to write it. You know, I played did one-man show, did the movie, did the musical. That's it. I want somebody, you know, young and handsome and to play Sonny. And I want all new people. And I think that's the way I would want it. But I would love to see it turn into a musical. Movie musical, yes.
Yeah, me too. Now, as you know, I'm coming to see your show in a few weeks, and I'm excited because everyone I know who has seen the movie, the musical, and your one-man show has told me that the one-man show is the best. That must be so gratifying.
You know what, Harvey, it is. They say that to me, and I'm very, very flattered by that. And I have you ever seen the one-man show?
I'm going to see it in a couple of weeks in Niagara.
Great. It's just one of those, it's the first time anyone on stage, an actor writer, wrote a script and played all the parts on stage by himself. And, you know, it just exploded and it made me a star. And that was really the catalyst of how it all began.
Oh, it sure was. You know, Chaz, when you look back at your childhood and you compare your life with the lives of the other kids you grew up with, are you surprised that you've had the success you've had?
No, I've always, you know, I hate to sound like that, but I always knew I was going to be a success. My dad wrote The Saddest Thing in Life is Wasted Talent. And my mother and father pushed us. And they used to tell us, if you dream, you know, dreams are not just for sleeping. You know, if you could do anything you want. And I had two sisters. They weren't in A Bronx Tale, because I wanted it to be just focused on the boy. But my two sisters were very successful way before me. And then I became successful. It's really, my father and mother said, don't waste your talent. whatever you do, do it really good. And I really have them to thank for that.
When your father told you, don't waste your talent, did you know what specifically what the talent was that he was referring to?
Well, at 10 years old, I wanted to be in movies. I said, you know, I remember my mother taking me to the movies. And I said, I want to do that. I could do that. And I just was fascinated with movies, you know. And when I was like 14, I started writing. I would write poetry. I would write little short stories. And it was just one of those things that, I mean, I grew up in a neighborhood where guys didn't do that. But I don't know. I felt like I was different, you know. I just was different.
Well, you sure were. You know, I've always wanted to ask you this question because you've raised two children.
Yes.
If you had been raising your kids in the exact same environment that you grew up in, is there anything different that you would have done compared to what your parents did to protect your children from negative influences?
Yeah, I probably would have did exactly what they did. They didn't have the money to get out of there. You know, finally we did get out of there. Right around 18, I was 17, 18. And after all that, the stuff that happened, my father said, all right, we have to move. And we moved to the Bronx, but in a better area, you know, up in Grand Concourse. Now, when I say a better area, I want to be clear about this. I had a wonderful childhood, incredible childhood. And the neighborhood was great. It was fun. It was all Italians. But was there violence there sometimes? Yes. And when the violence hit, it hit big. But other than that, I loved that my childhood, all my friends were, everybody was, we all had, our parents were together. And some of my friends were very successful. I'm not the only one. Some of them became professors. Some of them became doctors. A few became lawyers. And some became, you know, criminals and ended up in jail. Back then, Harvey, was different. All the guys hung out together. We didn't split up. So it was just like when somebody wanted to do something in bed, they went and we just stayed behind. That's the way it was.
What did your parents think of your decision to pursue a career as an actor?
Oh, they were very positive for it. Very positive. They were like, great, if that's what you want to do, you could do it. But, you know, be the best one, but you got to work hard. And I did work hard. My mom and dad, I was blessed with two parents that were just so amazing. And I'll tell you a quick story, and this tells you how amazing they were. When I was really broke, when I was bouncing in New York in my early 20s, they lived right on top of me. I lived in the apartment underneath them. I would put a little thing underneath their door. Dear Dad, could I have $20, $10 for gas? I would write it on an index card and slip it under the door. Because as a bouncer, I would get home late and I didn't want to wake them up. And I would sleep late in the morning. And I did that for about 4 or 5 months. And then finally, I started making more money and I didn't have to do it anymore. Cut to 20-something years later, I'm like a star and I get nominated for Academy Award for Bullets Over Broadway. So I told my parents, I said, I want you to go down the red carpet with me. You're part of this whole thing. So me and my new wife and my mother and father, we got the limo, of course, they pick you up and we got to the red carpet and Joan Rivers and all everybody's there. And we're just about to get out of the car with the next car to get out. And my mother says to my father, why don't you give it to him now? And my father says, okay. And he hands me an envelope. And I hold the envelope and I take out all these index cards. And I see $10, $15. And I say, what's this? He goes, you don't remember those? I said, no. I go, wait a minute. Are these the cards? And he said, yes. My father said, we saved those cards when you were in your 20s because we knew this day was going to happen.
That is so remarkable.
I know.
You know, you don't get to choose your parents, but you got two gems and you took everything that was the best out of them. You know, it's just phenomenal how proud you made those parents.
Yes, thank you. And again, I have to say, my two sisters. One of my sisters was a brainiac. She was, bachelor's, two master's degrees. My other sister, great student, started travel agencies, sold, she got 39 travel agencies, sold them for millions. So we were all, three of us were all very successful. I was the last one. My two other sisters were success before me, but I had great, great parents, great parents.
Now, of course, Chaz, it's very well known that you were offered $1 million by a major studio to sell your script for A Bronx Tale, but you refused. You refused, right, even though you had only $200 in the bank, because they wouldn't let you be the screenwriter and they wouldn't let you play Sonny.
Exactly, yeah.
Where did that confidence come from, that you just knew to hold out until the right offer came along? Where did that come from?
You know, Harvey, people ask me that, and I'm just, and my own shrink, who I've been in therapy a long time, and he said to me, he says, you're an anomaly. I never met anybody like you. He goes, and I mean that. He goes, I never met anybody this confident, and I just knew. I said, somebody's going to do this. It went from 250 to 500 to $1 million, and I had less than $200 in the bank, but I just said, you know what? It's too good. Somebody's going to cave in sooner or later. And then one night I did the show, standing ovation as always. I walked off and the stage manager said, hey, Robert De Niro's in your dressing room. We just saw the show. I said, wow. And I walked into the dressing room. There was Bob De Niro. And he said, it was amazing. He said, that was a great show. And he goes, you were great. I said, thanks, Bob. And he said, I know what's going on in Hollywood. He goes, let me tell you how I feel. I think you'll be great as Sonny. I think you should write it because it's your life and it'll be real and honest. I'll play your father and I'll direct it. And if you shake my hands, that's the way it'll be. I shook his hand and that's it. That's what happened.
Well, not since Sylvester Stallone and Rocky had anyone done what you did. And in 1991, you actually made a movie called Oscar with Sylvester Stallone. Did he give you any advice?
Yes. You know, it's funny. You ask very good questions. I spoke to him and he says, oh, yeah. He goes, I heard what's going on with you. I says, yes, Sly. And I said, I just want to let you know that after you did what you did, it gives me hope that maybe I could do it. And he said, well, if you really believe it, then just, stick to your guns and go with it. And that's all he said, but it was very helpful.
You know, everyone knows, of course, that you wrote the screenplay for the movie. I've always wanted to ask you this question, too. I think you can tell by now that I'm quite a big fan.
Yes, thank you.
When you were filming the movie, Chaz, were there any times when Chaz, the screenwriter, had a conflict with Chaz, the actor?
No, not too much at all. No, not at all. I mean, I was blessed with Bob De Niro, who was such a wonderful director. He was so collaborative with me and asked me. I mean, look, Bob had his opinions about, making in the screenplay, they send for the little boy to come see Sonny. In the one-man show, Sonny just sits down on the stoop and talks to him. And Bob said, I don't think this is real enough. We have to make this more real. And because he felt in a screenplay, you're seeing it. In a one-man show, you can get away with it. And I resisted a little bit in the beginning, but he explained how, and I did it, and he was right. So we would work together really wonderfully like that.
When you look at the enduring success of A Bronx Tale over the last 30 years, what do you think it is about the story that resonates with people so much?
It's that I wrote this like lightning in a bottle. It's like these archetypes. It's the father. Everybody can relate to the father. The mother, everybody can relate to the mother. The boy, the young boy. It's like, you don't know. See, Bronx Tale is not a gangster movie. Goodfellas, probably one of the great movies of all time. That's a gangster movie. Godfather, a gangster movie. A Bronx Tale is a family movie. That's a family movie. It's about a coming of age of a young boy. And everybody who's been through life recognizes that, and they go through the same things. I mean, there's certain stories that are just you know, enduring. They last forever, and A Bronx Tale is one. People can just relate to it. It was a hit on Broadway 30 years ago, and it's a hit again. It's Harvey, it's one of those things that people cry, they laugh, they cheer. You know, who was it? Alfred Hitchcock used to say, there's only three things you can do to an audience. You can make them, and he goes, and if you do two out of three, you got a hit. You can make them laugh, you can make them cry, or you could scare them. And in Bronx Tale, I do all three. So it just works. Just works.
In my opinion, there's three movies, classic movies, that are about a little boy that really stand out. There's E.T., there's A Christmas Story, and there's A Bronx Tale. And yes. I just somehow, whenever I see you on screen, I still see that little boy. Do you feel him still inside you?
Oh, God, yes. Yes. That's why I'm able to play the little boy. Because people go, wait a minute. You play the 9-year-old boy? I go, yeah. They go, how do you do that? That's impossible. I go, I can't explain it. You have to see the show. I can't explain it. You just got to be committed, and you got to go for it. And if you go for it and you're committed in your heart, you can make it believable.
I know you've been on stage touring the one-man show across the country. I'm going to be seeing it in Niagara Falls very soon. Do you like being on stage as much as making movies and TV shows?
I like being on stage more. I really do. Yeah, more. Yeah, I enjoy it. Obviously, you don't get paid as well, but with the one-man show, that's a little different. But other than that, you know, I love being on stage. I just love it. It's like a stage is the aerobics of an actor. That's the training of an actor. I love making movies. I love doing television. I love doing Modern Family. That was fun. But I love being on stage with a bunch of actors, like really going at it. And the one-man show, that's a freak of nature. I don't know. You know, it hasn't been done since then, and I don't know if it'll ever be done. But I've seen it done. I went to Paris because I licensed it out in other countries. And I saw this wonderful actor, Francois, I can't remember his last name. He did A Bronx Tale, the one-man show in French. And it was a huge hit there. I don't know.
That it's universal. Now, you've said many times, Chaz, how monumentally important Robert De Niro has been to your career.
Yes.
What I find amazing is that he's only directed two movies, A Bronx Tale in 1993 and The Good Shepherd in 2006.
Yes.
I know he co-directed A Bronx Tale, the musical, but are you surprised that after the huge success of A Bronx Tale, the movie, he hasn't done more movie directing?
Yeah, I wish he would, because he's a great director, you know, but, you know, he explained it to me. He said to me early on that if he could direct 4 or 5 movies in his lifetime, he'd be very happy. You know, it's directing is not like, it's like a year in advance of preparing, then another 6 months of, you know, prep, and then shooting. It's a 3-year commitment, you know. And I don't know if Bob wants to put 3 years into something now, you know, at this age, you know, but he's a great director. He really is.
You made your directorial debut in 1999 on the TV show Oz.
Right.
Directing, you directed an episode in season 3 called Unnatural Disasters. I told you I was a fan.
Yes.
You then directed Women versus Men in 2002 and Noel in 2004. So, of course, I have to ask you, would you like to do more directing?
Yes, I would. I love to. Yes, I would. And I hope to. I hope to now. I guess I could tell you. Yeah, not too many people know, but I just directed my one-man show. I filmed it with 5 cameras. And we're going to be doing it at the Tribeca Film Festival. It's going to premiere there.
Congratulations. Mazel tov.
Thank you.
That is fabulous.
Yeah, I'm really excited by it.
I want to ask you about Bullets Over Broadway and your terrific portrayal of Cheech, which earned you an Oscar nomination. What was Woody Allen like to work with as a director compared to Robert De Niro?
Well, Bob will talk to the actors a lot more than Woody would. Woody just hires the right people and then he lets you do, he goes, go, just go. Where Bob is really hands-on, he lets you go, but he's very hands-on about what he wants. He's very specific about what he wants. Woody just feels, I hire the right guy, let him do what he wants. Where Bob is much more specific, try this, try that. You know, let's go a little bigger, let's go a little less. Let's raise the stakes here. Different.
So what style resonates with you most?
I like both. It doesn't bother me. You know, I'm a very confident actor. I like, if you could tell a good director, you could tell when they have your, when they're holding you up, like, hey man, I'm gonna hold, don't worry about it. You're not gonna get embarrassed. This is what I want. You could feel a director who's not really good. They just don't know what to do. They're like swinging at the fences. And when that happens, that's a terrible thing. Then all the actors look at themselves and we say, well, it's time to save your own ass time. You know, that's what we do, you know.
Well, Bullets Over Broadway for me was the movie that proved to everybody that you could do comedy.
Yes. I started in comedy, but I got so famous for these harder roles, like Usual Suspects and you know, all these other roles, that I just was known as this very, very tough guy, but it was great to do Bullets. I really loved it.
Well, you did a few other comedies, including Faithful with Cher and The Perez Family with Marissa Tomei, Alfred Molina, Angelica Houston, and Analyze This was a comedy. And of course, everybody loved you on Modern Family as Shorty. Do you enjoy the chance to be a comedic actor?
Yes, very much. Very much. I enjoy it because it shows my range. And when you see Bronx Tale, the one-man show, it's funny. It's actually more funnier than the movie and the musical because I'm able to be free and do what I want, you know, so you'll see.
I can't wait. In 2001, you starred in a terrific TV movie called Boss of Bosses, in which you played the New York mob boss, Paul Castellano. How do you prepare for a role when you're playing a real person?
Well, I read everything I needed to know about him. And then I knew some people who definitely knew him really well. And I would ask them questions about him. You know, nothing personal about crime or anything. I just asked them personal questions about how Paul would handle this and what kind of guy he was and what was his temper like and what was his feelings like. And they were nice enough, you know, to tell me. And it helped me a lot. It helped me a great deal.
In 2004, Chaz, you were in a really powerful movie called One Last Ride about a compulsive gambler. You played Tweet, the bookie.
Yeah.
Did you know that that movie is regularly played at Gamblers Anonymous meetings?
I heard about that. Yeah, I guess it's true because you're about the fifth person who told me that. So that's nice to hear. I'm very proud of that movie. It's a good movie.
And one of my favorite Chaz Palminteri movies is Once Upon a Time in Queens.
Yeah.
Co-starring the wonderful Paul Sorvino. Can you share some memories with us of making that movie?
Yeah. You know, Paul is a real consummate actor. And he's fun. But when the camera starts rolling, when we're there on the set, he's very serious. So I kind of like that. And we hit it off really well. And there's actors who are givers. And Paul's a giver. You know, he would give to me and I would give back to him. I want him to be great. He wanted me to be great. And that's the best kind of actor. He's a wonderful actor. And I miss him dearly.
And you've also worked with so many great directors. I mean, just to name a few, in addition to Robert De Niro, I can think of John Landis, Woody Allen, William Friedkin, Paul Mazursky, my good friend Bobby Moresco, who was on our show last year.
Yeah.
He directed you in One-Eyed King.
Yes.
Do you have a favorite director that you've worked with?
Well, I mean, I would have to say Bob De Niro and Woody. And also, I really liked Friedkin, Bill Friedkin. He was really, I learned a lot from Friedkin about camera movement and cameras and actors, because he was, Bill Friedkin always moves that camera and always has an idea, like a storyboard in his head. And wanting to be a director, I would just watch him on the set. And I really liked Lee Tamahara on Mulholland Falls. I thought he was a wonderful director, very much.
Now, just over 2 years ago, you started a podcast, Chaz, and you've now filmed close to 200 episodes. Your show is incredibly motivational. You share a lot of important life lessons. I'm very moved by it. What inspired you to become a talk show host?
What happened was, when COVID hit, the TV series stopped, the movie stopped, and I just said, wow, you know, all right, I'll write a little bit. And then a very dear friend of mine, my best friend, said, let's do a podcast together. He was assistant attorney general. He was inspector general of New York, assistant. We grew up together. And he passed away in COVID. And I was just destroyed. I was so broken up, but I know he said we should do a podcast. And now I do the podcast because he inspired me to do it. And right behind me is his picture. If you ever watch it, there's a photo of a man, and that's Phil Foley, a great man. And I just started doing it because I was bored, you know, being home, and it just took off. And I just enjoy doing it, you know.
Well, it's wonderful. And, you know, in many ways, your podcast to me feels like therapy. It gives me a shot in the arm. So I'm a little surprised to hear you say that you go to therapy, because here you were, a confident young man raised by parents that were very validating, really reinforced your dreams. You had the guts to say no to a major studio when they're offering you $1 million.
Right.
You're giving therapy to hundreds of thousands of people on your podcast.
Right.
What in the world do you need therapy for? You're the most together guy I've ever met.
Well, everybody has their demons, Harvey, you know. So I went, in fact, when I saw him, he's a very famous, you know, a psychiatrist in Hollywood. His name is Dr. Phil Stutz. In fact, they did Jonah Hill did a documentary on him. Brilliant guy. I went to him before I made it, because I felt like something was going to happen. And I said to him, he goes, well, what's the matter? I said, I really got no problems, really. I said, but I know I'm going to be very famous soon and I want to be prepared. And he looked at me and said, no one's ever said that to me before. So I started seeing him, and you find out as you talk things that maybe bother you. And I learned a lot, but he said, I'm the only guy who never talked about acting. You know, I never talked about confidence or acting. I would talk about other things, you know, that I wanted to learn from. And I became a better actor and a better writer because of that.
I think it's amazing that the fact that you knew that you should talk to somebody to prepare yourself for fame is the biggest proof that you did not need therapy.
He said that to me. He goes, you sure you want to do this? And I said, yeah, I got things on my mind. And I want to be sure that I don't want to blow this thing. You know, if it happens, but it's going to happen. I know it's going to happen, I used to say. And it did. I knew it was happening soon. I said, it's going to happen. And I want to be prepared for this. And it really helped me a lot to understand stardom, Harvey, is really, really hard. Stardom is hard for anybody under the age of 30. Why do you think all these guys end up in rehab or they destroy their career? It's like a brick. You're like you're eating bricks every day. And before you know it, I was an unknown actor who was on Broadway, but nobody knew me. I went from that to starring with the greatest artist in the world, Robert De Niro, traveling all over the world in private jets, then the Academy Award nomination. I mean, I was like, whoa. You know, it takes you back. Like, you have to know that it's good, but it doesn't last. And you have to prepare yourself for the cold times. And being in therapy was a great benefit for me.
The thing about you that I've always sensed, just as a very loyal fan, is that I believe you have very, very good instincts and intuition about people. There's something about you the way you were raised, the lessons you learned in the Bronx, something makes me feel that you know who you can trust and that you won't be wrong.
Absolutely. I was born, and I say this, I hope it sounds modestly, I was born with X-ray eyes. I could look at a person and feel their aura, that if they're a good person or a bad person, if I trust them or I don't. And usually, most of the time, I'm right. I don't know. I was born with this. Everybody has a gift. And that was my gift. People say to me, you know, I was not a great student in high school. I was okay. I just got by from the skin of my ass. When I went to college, I started applying myself. And I went, well, wait a minute. I'm smart. You know, I sound like Fredo. But I went, wait a second. But I didn't realize I had dyslexia. And that's what hurt me. But I found out later, there's an advantage to have dyslexia. One part of my brain is this way, but the other part of my brain, I can look at a script, or I can write a script and look at blank paper and go, oh, I see the movie. Oh, yeah, yeah. And I could just see it. It just goes in front of me. It's strange. But so, I mean, I see people like that. I could just see through them. And usually I'm right. You're absolutely right about me.
Well, I'm wondering, how important is that skill you have, that gift of being able to read people? How important was that in your ability to manage being famous?
Beyond important. It was beyond even the deal. I would meet the biggest people in the world wanting to do Bronx Tale. A-list directors, A-list producers, studio heads. Everybody wanted Bronx Tale, and I would sit with them and I would talk to them. But one of my rules was I had to be play and pay, which not play or pay, play and pay, which nobody gets that. That's like they can't make the movie without you. Some wanted to give me play or pay. That means they could fire me, but they got to pay me. And I didn't care about that. I said, no. I have to play Sonny. And some said, well, we'll give you, you could trust me. And I just said, no, no. And De Niro was the only one. I looked him in the eye and I knew it was going to be okay. I just knew it, you know.
Did any of those big shot executives ever apologize to you or acknowledge that they were wrong?
One said, wow. He didn't say he was wrong. He just said, you made a great movie. You know, you went with the right guy. That's what he said to me. And another one said that he was sorry only because he was a director. And I just said, I kind of told him, I said, look, you came to the, I read about people before I meet them. And I said, I heard about you. You got out of film school 8 years ago and you came here and somebody gave you a break and now you're a big director. I said, don't I deserve the same break that you got? And he said to me, you're right, Chaz, I understand. And we shook hands and we left. Later, when I saw him, he came to me and apologized. He said, you know, I remember what we talked about. He goes, you did the right thing. And that was very nice of him.
That's big for Hollywood. You know that.
Yes.
That's big. Now, you talk a lot on your show about your Italian heritage. So I want to ask you, Chaz, is it important to you to be a good role model and ambassador for the Italian-American community?
Oh, absolutely. I think about that all the time. You know, I want to be a good role model, especially for my children. And what my father did with me about waste of talent, I do that with my kids. I give them cards in their room. The saddest thing in life is waste of talent. And they're both very successful. You know, my son graduated Berkeley in Boston. Top musical school. My daughter is a senior at University of Michigan, the top school for the arts. So it's important that if you're going to talk the talk, you got to walk the walk, you know. And I try to be a good role model to people, and I'm very happy about that. You know, I'm very proud of being Italian American. I'm proud to, like, especially Italians. We're the last ones always to get beat up, you know. But I always say, hey, man. You know, I'm not in the mafia. I was never in the mafia. I'm not a tough guy. I was always a man who just, I was an artist. And, you know, I never try to be something that I'm not. And I've always said that.
Yeah,
that I play tough guys.
That authenticity and that sincerity is what makes you so memorable on the screen. I'm sure you know that.
I appreciate that.
Now, in 2011, I'm going to get a little emotional here because your fans really appreciated this. You received a star on the Bronx Walk of Fame. That right. must have been a very emotional moment for you.
Yeah, it was. You know, I mean, you gotta realize I was this, you know, Italian boy, grew up in the street in the Bronx, and not everybody was rich there, obviously, and I had dreams, and all my dreams came true. They really have.
Then when you look back at your career, Chaz, have you had the career that you were envisioning for yourself way back when you were in acting school?
I think so. I always wanted to act and write and direct, and I've done all three. And but the main thing is I wanted to be a good father, and I wanted to have children, and I have a great wife who's in the business too, and she's wonderful, and both of us together we raised two great kids. You know, that is my most proud thing. You know, I mean, to me, and this is my opinion, I think you could have all the success in the world, but if you fail as a father, I think you're still a little bit of a failure.
You could never have failed given the parents you had, that's for sure.
Yes.
Do you have any interest in sitting down and writing a memoir?
You know, I have. I've written about 200 pages already, but I have to get back at it again. And I always feel like my best is yet to come. You know, like I got these great scripts that I'm writing now, and I think I'll just do it a little when I'm a little older.
Yeah, I think you'll know when it's the right time because you do have such good instincts. And right now you're too busy in the present. You're not interested in contemplating the past, but the time will come. And then I'm going to be banging on your door asking you to come back to promote that book.
I will be there, Harvey. You're a terrific interviewer. Terrific.
Oh, thank
you. Know, I like people who do, you know, who do their homework. And boy, you do your homework. I can tell you that.
Oh, thank you, Chaz. Well, I only have one more question for you. Are you ready?
Sure. Yes, go ahead.
With your legendary on-screen personality, how in the world did you manage to never be in a single episode of The Sopranos?
Well, that's a long... Well, I'll just make it a short story. What happened was I was offered the role of Tony Soprano, okay, very early on in 1997. And I read the pilot and I loved it. It was great. But at that time, I just came out of the hospital because I had throat cancer, you know, and I was fine, but I was so weak and tired that the doctor said, you know what, you need 6 months to get back on your feet and relax. So I couldn't do it. I didn't want to do it. I wasn't ready to do it. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, that David Chase, because it was very secret about what happened to me, and I think he just thought I turned him down, and I don't know. I was never on it. I was never asked to be on it again. That's the honest to goodness truth.
Well, I'm glad we cleared that up because people always want to know that. Well, I want to tell you something, sir. You are, of course, always identified with that classic line of your father's from A Bronx Tale. One of the saddest things in life is wasted talent. Let me tell you, sir, that you have most certainly not wasted your extraordinary talent. You made your dear father and mother so very proud. And I just want to thank you so much for sharing that talent with the world. Thank you so much for taking the time to appear on our show.
Thank you so much, Harvey. It was wonderful. Thank you. God bless.
Our guest has been the legendary Chaz Palminteri. If you haven't yet seen his incredible one-man show, A Bronx Tale, please go to his official website, chazpalminteri.net. And you will see his tour schedule there. You can also learn more about Mr. Palminteri's career and buy his merchandise. And don't forget to subscribe to the Chaz Palminteri Show YouTube channel and watch his wonderful podcast. My name is Harvey Brownstone. Thank you to my producer, Steve Silver, my director of programming, Deborah Batsafin, my production assistants, Rosa Puzo and Robert Monaghan, my PR directors, Eileen Shapiro and Jimmy Starr, and my entire team at the XPTV1 network in the UK. Thank you all for joining us. See you next time.
Thanks for watching. Be sure to check out all the great interviews on the Harvey Brownstone Interviews YouTube channel. Don't forget to subscribe and ring the bell to be notified when new videos are posted.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.